This is Talk To Me, the official podcast of MetalNexus.net. Your host, Joshua Toomey, bring you epic rants, anecdotes, and interviews with heavy hitters from hardcore
our new life begins!
To hair metal. This is Talk To Me.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Talk To Me, the official podcast of Metal Nexus. Make sure to head over to MetalNexus.net for all your news, reviews, interviews, and the archives of the Talk To Me podcast. This is episode 160. The guests, plural, this week are Sky Sweetnam and Matt Drake of Sumo Psycho. Huge thank you to Rob Rivera of Nonpoint for hooking this interview up. It's a great one. We talk all kinds of stuff. She has a great past, an amazing journey that they've went on to end up where they are now, and you'll definitely love this one. A long chat with both those guys, so you'll definitely have to check that one out. Not a whole lot at the top of the show. The show is brought to you by Good Company with Bowling. That is our good friend Scott Bowling down there in Atlanta. Make sure you are checking out his show Good Company with Bowling on YouTube, and also scottgoodcompany.com if you want to see great, well shot, well done interviews done by the same crew that does DDP Yoga. Make sure to head over to scottgoodcompany.com or Good Company with Bowling on YouTube. Interviews with Head from Korn, Mikey from Islander, who are no longer on the Warped Tour. Man, what a crazy story that was. Make sure to check that out. One date into the Warped Tour and they get kicked off because Mikey jumps into some drums. How crazy is that? It's a punk rock tour and they did a very punk rock act and they get kicked off a tour. Oh, well. Upcoming interviews with Rich Ward of Stuck Mojo, Eddie Trunk, Jose Mangan. So many great interviews. And then, like I said, the archives are great, too. So check those out. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of views, and you will enjoy it, too. So make sure to let Scott know that the Talk To Me podcast sent you, and enjoy your time over there listening to some interviews on Good Company with Bowling at scottgoodcompany.com or check his YouTube channel out. If you want to support the show, make sure you're going to patreon.com/talktome. Pick out a tier, a couple of bucks, throw a couple of bucks at the show. All the money goes back into the show. I just bought a new mixer with the money from Patreon. How cool is that? Thank you to all of my supporters out there on Patreon. So if you want to help the show out, it does go right back into the show. Patreon.com/talktome. Select a tier, a couple of bucks a month. You'll never even miss it out of your bank account. Don't forget to see me at the Nashville Rockin' Pod Expo, Nashville, Tennessee, at the Nashville Palace. How many times do I get to say Nashville in that? August 25th, you'll get to see all of your favorite podcasters, so many great guests. I'm going to play the commercial right here for it, so I don't have to talk too much about it. But it's going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun. A live Talk To Me with Head from Korn on stage at the Nashville Palace, August 25th. $10 gets you in. Let's check out the commercial.
Still love it loud?
So do we. Rockin' Pod returns to Nashville on Saturday, August 25th. Over 25 rock podcasts from all over North America recording on-site. Vinyl and memorabilia dealers selling the best in rock merchandise. And awesome rock musicians and personalities participating in signing sessions and on-stage panel discussions throughout the day. Special guests include current and former members of Korn, Kiss, Angel, Winger, Loudness, Accept, Bang Tango, King Tracy, as well as producers that have worked with Slayer, Ozzy, Alice Cooper, Seven Dust, and many more. More guests being added weekly. Don't miss your chance to be part of an awesome celebration of all things rock. Rockin' Pod takes place at the legendary Nashville Palace, August 25th, 2018. More details available at rockinpod.com. That's rockinpod.com. The Nashville Rockin' Pod Expo, brought to you by Blind Tiger Record Club, School of Rock Nashville, and School of Rock Franklin, a DBG Productions event.
Hopefully I will see you there. So let's get into the episode right now. Rob's pick from the kit will be up after the Sumo Psycho interview, so make sure and stick around for that. It's a great one. You can definitely a band on their farewell tour. I'll give you a hint what Rob's pick from the kit is this week. A band on their farewell tour. So let's talk to Sky Sweetnam and Matt Drake of Sumo Psycho.
We'll be right back.
Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm excellent, actually. Just enjoying a beautiful day here in Canada. Outside, gorgeous.
Fantastic. Well, welcome to the show. I have to say that you, the more I've looked into you, the more fascinating person that you've become. Like, it's you've lived an insane life, and you just turned 30. You've lived in a crazy life.
I have. Now, I do have my guitarist here with me as well. If you would like to add him into the show.
Okay, we can do that.
Hi, what's up? My name's Matt. Hi, how's it going, brother?
How you doing, man?
Cheers, man.
Good. Well, I'm glad to have you guys on the show. I did want to start out with, obviously, with the passing of Vinnie Paul. I know that Vinnie was in attendance at the Nonpoint Butcher Baby show that you guys played in Las Vegas recently. Did you guys have any interaction with Vinnie Paul that night?
Besides from staring at him and thinking that he was like one of the best drummers from one of my favorite bands in the whole world, I didn't actually talk to the gentleman. I felt to leave him enjoying the Butcher Baby set. I didn't feel like bugging him.
Yeah, it's like one of those regrets you have in hindsight, you know? You're always like, oh, it just doesn't seem like the right time right now.
But he was watching this show.
Yeah.
It is, but we regret the fact that obviously he's passed away. That sucks. Like, Pantera is probably what I would say between Sky and I, like, our favorite, probably, like, real metal band that, like, kind of got us into metal, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So that kind of sucks.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, what's your favorite Pantera album between the two of you?
Okay, I'm between Vulgar Display.
That's
Far
my
Beyond.
Favorite.
Yours, Vulgar Display.
Yeah, Vulgar Display.
Mine's between Vulgar Display and Far Beyond Driven.
Nice.
I think Vulgar Display is still my absolute favorite record, though.
Yeah, I have a crazy story about that. Actually, my first intro to Pantera was back in the day. I was in Paris with the president of EMI Paris,
okay.
And we were having like a really nice like dinner in France, and I was just talking like music to the guy, and he was like, "Oh, you're starting to get into heavy music." I was probably around 16 when this happened, and he was like, "Yeah," he's like, "One of my favorite all time bands is Pantera," and I was like, "Oh, I never heard of them." And he's like, "No, you've never heard of Pantera?" And I was like, "No." And he literally stopped like midway through the dinner and ran over to like across the street to the record store and like brought me back like all the Pantera records they had in stock. And he's like, "You listen to this. If you like heavy music, this is, you're going to be your like your favorite, next favorite band." And so that was my intro to Pantera, which is pretty random and cool considering that the dinner I was having with this guy was, you know, over, you know, my pop career.
Right.
And had nothing to do with like me getting into metal, and you know, all these little things kind of started pushing me in that direction, you know what I mean?
It's funny, random story about how I heard Pantera was, I was going with a friend of mine, and this is in the 90s, and Megadeth was holding a canned food drive, and they did a whole thing. If you gave 10 pounds of canned food to your local food bank, you could get a backstage pass. So me and a friend of mine obviously rustled up some cans of beets and whatever, and we went down there. And on the way down there, he was like, "This is Pantera. It was actually a Vulgar Display of Power." And I was just like, "Oh my God, this is amazing." But yeah, it always came around a canned food drive, which I think is funny, put on by Megadeth.
That's great, though.
That's cool.
Very good. So how did the tour with Nonpoint and Butcher Babies end up?
Well, I mean, I've got rave reviews about both those bands and the experience we had. I mean, we couldn't have been treated better. The fans were super receptive to everything that we brought to the table. And, you know, we did well. We sold merch. We didn't break down, which is, you know, usually
no
something
breakdowns.
That happens on tour.
Nice. 2 months across the states and we didn't break down once. That was badass.
Yeah.
It's usually about 3 weeks in before there's always a problem, but we kept like around week 7, I was like, "Are we going to get through this whole thing without breaking down?" And we did. It was pretty cool.
Especially since we started and ended probably at one of the two like furthest points from our hometown. We started in Dallas and then we ended up in Mesa, Arizona. So being from Toronto, it's like, you know, you start the tour, you've already got like a few day trek just to get to show one. And then by the time you end up at the end, you've got a couple more days of straight driving. to get back home. So,
but it went over right.
It was great. Okay. Yeah.
The Nonpoint guys are amazing. Mm-hmm. Butcher babies are amazing. Like, as people, we've been lucky to go out with them more than once. So, like, we were out with Nonpoint in Europe a couple years ago.
2015.
All right.
Yeah.
You're right on your date. And and then we were out with Butcher Babies as well. What date?
I think that was 2016.
Okay. So, and both bands kind of took us under their wing. And so going on a tour with bands that we've already been on compared to bands that you've never been with, where you're like, oh, you know, the first week or two when you first go out with bands, you barely meet them. You're kind of quiet. You're kind of worried about stepping on toes, making sure you know how everything's going to work schedule-wise, where these are good people that we know. So we just kind of go and have, you know, by day two, we were like, let's get off the bus and start drinking and hanging out with these people. They're good friends with us. So I think we all got along really well.
Yeah, Rob from Nonpoint, who does a weekly pick from the kit on this show, has been championing you guys for a while to me. He's like, you got to have Sumo Psycho 1. You got to have Sumo Psycho 1. So so thanks to Rob for hooking this up.
Yeah, Rob is the man. Like, you know, it's crazy. Sky and I have been making jokes about it. Like, Rob, when we first went out with them in Europe, Rob was like this, like, hard guy. Like he wasn't hard, like, as a mean. He just quiet. He was workaholic. They were serious about their tour in Europe. And I didn't feel like we really had many conversations besides from just working together. But it was like a whole different man. We walked into the American run with him, and he's just like, I don't know. I bond with him huge. We just spend every day together. And he's an amazing man. He's an amazing drummer, like an absolute killer drummer to watch play.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things I noticed with the band is the visuals of the band is very, you know, at the forefront. I mean, obviously, one stat I saw that was great was like, you know, you have 2 albums, 16 singles, and 17 music videos. So it's so obviously I'm assuming music videos is a big part of what you're presenting to the world. You know, Sky, where did that come from with you? Did it come from, you know, just kind of being in music your entire life and wanting to put out, you know, so much work?
Yeah, I mean, I actually, the first video I ever really did, like my first music video I did, was a stop motion animation video when I was about 14 that ended up getting me signed to my first record contract. And ever since then, I just knew that the multimedia was where it's at, that you couldn't just, you know, you can't just be a pretty face and have a good voice. Like, especially in the independent world, you got to have more than one skill. You put yourself out there and show the world what you got. And to me, the best way to do that was through videos. And I remember when YouTube first started, I was right on it. I just wanted to, you know, be part of that scene and make content that people could, you know, witness, you know, my music through and witness my personality through. And I just kind of slowly started self-teaching myself how to do. I never had any training in like any video production or editing or anything.
We still have never had any training.
No.
We still run into problems.
Yeah.
It's like one of those days where we're like, we have it all figured out until we start shooting, and then we realize we don't have it all figured out. But
yeah.
That's part of figuring it out.
And I think part of it, too, is just being overly ambitious and biting off more than you can chew, because you end up learning a lot in the process of that. If you have this great idea and you're just like, okay, how are we going to make this work? For one example of that would be our video for Fighter, where Matt and I decided that we wanted to basically make a war between a robot and myself, as if we were kind of like King Kong and Godzilla, like these massive creatures, you know, just destroying a city. So we thought, how best to do that in a practical way? And we started figuring out ways to build a miniature city within our house. And we basically destroyed our living room so that we didn't have a living room. And I think it lasted that way for over a year between all the paper mache and cutting with cardboard and paper, and basically just constructed a city in our living room, a miniature city that we could basically destroy in this one battle, this battle for our music video. And I mean, it's like kind of crazy ideas and commitment like that. I think that what sets us apart is the fact that we were definitely willing to spend, you know, months building this thing. And then on top of that, not, you know, having a living room all squished in our kitchen, you know, for, you know, half a year. So it's fun. It's like living completely for the art, and it you know, it's like the road is like that, where you're basically just living completely for the art. And we try to do that when we're off the road as well, when it comes to the videos and whatnot. So it's fun. We get ourselves into some pickles.
Into some pickles. That's the most metal thing ever said on this show.
And it's like, we always go after anything. We call them like B-horror movie. No, like D-style horror videos. Most of the time we just like watch videos that we love, movies that we love, and we literally just go, hey, we can rip that off and turn it into our own kind of thing and see how it comes. And it's quite an adventure.
I have to quickly clarify. The reason why I say pickle is there's one line in one of my favorite band's Skindred songs that says, you're going to get yourself in a pickle. And I love that line so much that it's become
a
thing.
We use it all the time. We're like, oh, we're in a pickle. We're in a pickle right now.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah, so metal.
How did you come across Benji and get him onto a Sumo Psycho song?
Oh, my God. That's all thanks to me, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, Matt was introduced to Skindred early on during the Babylon record, their first album. And Matt and I Matt and I knew each other since, you know, I've been 14. He's played guitar for me in my band
and
stuff. This
is still a long story. Long story short is I introduced her to Babylon. She went after Benji, not me. She went after Benji. And Benji loved her. And they hit it off, and we started writing a song together.
Yeah.
That's the short story.
It's cooler than that because literally...
That's so cool.
Well, the other cool thing is that Skindred was literally the band that made me start this band. So it was because Matt gave me that Babylon record at the right time in my life where I was kind of transitioning between...
Or the wrong time.
I like to think it was the right time. When I was kind of like transitioning in my kind of life and my career and decided I wanted to start something new, a new project. And it was highly, highly influential to what I wanted to create as a sound. And so Skindred was always one of the top bands that I had kind of on my list of wanting to tour with, wanting to collaborate with, and they still are. And so the fact that kind of Benji gave us the stamp of approval is pretty rad. And, you know, you always hear that saying, don't meet your heroes. Well, if your hero is Benji Webb, meet him because he is so cool and so down to earth. And
we're going to bug him again. He's going to write another one with us. On the next record, I'll have another one featuring Benji Webb, I bet. You
absolutely.
Watch. We get along with that guy and he's awesome and we love him as a singer. So I'll bug him more than once.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of talked about being independent earlier, and that's the one thing I've noticed about Sumo Psycho is, you know, you guys are very proud of being an independent band. And the one thing that I think makes you guys being an independent band maybe a little bit more prevalent is the fact that normally a girl that, you know, was once a pop star and did a lot of pop things and had a pop record deal that wanted to go heavy and rock and metal, I feel like, you know, you would have a team behind you that's okay, well, we'll find a guitar player and a drummer and a bass player and we'll do this and we'll find the best producers and things like that, to where I think what you guys have done have made it a little bit more authentic and made a heavy band with a former pop star actually viable.
Yeah, I mean, being an independent band is, you know, I learned a lot from my life and my career, and Matt was there throughout the whole thing playing guitar. And I mean, that's how we met, like in the most, you know, real way possible, you know, two musicians just meeting each other and we're collaborating on the road for one project, but you know, our hearts are in some other place that we eventually kind of decide that, you know, we want to do something together. And I mean, Matt was like this senior in high school when I was a junior, like I looked up to him and all of his musical influences. I was pretty young when I was out on the road for the first time. And I think it was, you know, thanks to him and thanks to other band members that I had around me who were strong role models of being, you know, artists and enjoying, you know, music for the art and not just like, you know, being around because of the fame or the glamour or whatever. Like everyone that I surrounded myself with was honestly just like, just wanted to do music for their livelihood. So I learned a lot from Matt as far as, you know, what bands to listen to. I learned a lot about being an artist and sticking to your guns and how it's important to have integrity and all that kind of stuff. And so when it came to doing this project, I actually, there was one moment where my A&R rep, who had been with me through the Capitol days, had asked me to do another project and fly me out to LA and the whole nine yards. I kind of made the decision to stay in Toronto and work on this project, Sumo Psycho, at that point, because I just felt so that I couldn't let the glamour and the fame and the call of Hollywood or whatever, like, sway what my artistic vision was. And I had to do something that was based purely on, like, my vision and do something instead of letting other people lead me, as I had to be the leader. And I think that, you know, going through that experience is one of the best things that I've ever done for myself. Because a lot of people can get caught up in Hollywood and all that kind of the bullshit that surrounds the industry instead of what we're actually there for. And that's just playing music that we love and being inspired to write songs and going out on the road and pouring your heart out on stage. So, I mean, I'd like to think that, you know, being an independent band is great, but we're never closed off to, you know, future opportunities or future people that want to work with us. If they have the same vision and they have the same passion that we have, then, you know, something could happen. But my path so far has been like, I pretty much know what I got to do to make this thing happen. And we've been doing a pretty good job so far at growing that fan base. And so, yeah, we're pretty stoked at how far we've gotten so far as an independent band. Sorry to talk your head off.
It's a podcast. That's what it's for. I think what you guys are also doing too is you're kind of, you know, building yourself up to where you might have a little bit more leverage in the negotiation process, rather than, you know, obviously a new band that hasn't done anything, they're going to be able to take advantage of what you guys are wanting to do and maybe sign you to a bad deal, to where now you guys can go in with a little bit more of the bargaining chips.
Look at you. You know the biz. You know how it goes. I'll be honest. We've had 3 or 4 major good deals come down, or what some people would consider deals come down the road, mm-hmm. that we've just literally turned around and said no to because of the fact that we were with a major label. We kind of learned our lesson of just like what a really good deal is compared to what a deal is.
Right.
And I think younger bands, they just see a deal and they're like, jump on it, where we were like, I don't think so. So we've just kind of run it ourselves, and it actually seems to, we don't have anybody to answer to. That's kind of fun. And B, we can release anything when we want to release it. So we can make our business plans work around our schedules more than the way a label does, where they're like, you know, if they're pushing another act at the same time they're pushing you, it's a waiting game on how you're going to get pushed. We just push ourselves. So there's been some good things about learning how to do it DIY completely. You know, our manager's always trying to hunt for other things, but right now we've kind of learned how to navigate. So we just keep going. And it's thanks to the people that are involved with our music videos and like our weird stuff. And I don't know, maybe the fact that we are so honest about how we do it, it's helped make us grow. You know, it's helped bands like Nonpoint want to bring us out because of the fact of what we do. So, I mean, that's good to us, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. 20 years ago when I was playing music a little bit more prevalently before I toured with a couple of decent bands, but, you know, at 19, 20 years old, had you handed me a record contract, I would have signed the first thing given to me. So I'm kind of glad I didn't.
Yeah.
It's not easy. What's really a shame is when I see the young band, you know, a really young band, and I see them come out and they're quite young, and I see them blow up out of nowhere. And you realize that when they blow up out of nowhere, there's either the long game, which is like you blow up after years of working your butt off, that takes you a long time and that you've established a business that you know how to work when you get out there. Or there's blowing up overnight, which is a label just spent a lot of fucking money to make sure that you're known around the world in marketing strategy. It doesn't mean you're actually pulling in the sales that you should pull in or the record deals. And these young bands, they think they're stoked. They're like, oh, this is it. We just nailed it. And they have no clue that once that record cycle's over, and if they don't recoup the amount of money that label's spending, they're done. It's over. There's no more working on you. And if you don't know how to work it yourself, you're screwed. And I think one of the main things we kind of really learned is, like, you know, there's a way to navigate and not screw yourself in this business.
Yeah, it's definitely a messed up business. And I think there's a lot more tools out there for younger artists to, you know, there are a lot of podcasts about the record business, and there's a lot of, you know, YouTube videos about the record business, and maybe even the bands are being a little bit more forthright about what happened to them in the record business. So,
and you're right. And not being scared to say no. If a label's knocking on your door, if somebody's saying, hey, we would like to throw you a deal, that means there's something of interest. That means that other people will probably have interest as well. Labels or bands sometimes won't even think, hey, man, this label's knocking on our door, we better sign right away, instead of going, hey, this label's knocking on our door, maybe we should shop it everywhere else, like somebody actually likes us. But, you know, when you're young, you jump on that. You're like, oh, my God, somebody wants me, I got to do this. But it's better to look at the long picture. The big picture is more prevalent than the short game, you know?
All right, Sky, I need to ask you a few questions about a few things. Obviously, you're the first of many, or you're the first guest out of the many guests that have been on here that have done a few of these things. So I need to know about them, because it's funny, you know, going into this, I'm like, I need to ask, you know, what did you learn from touring with Nonpoint, or what did you learn from touring with Fozzy? But I need to know, what did you learn from touring with Britney Spears?
I knew that was coming, eh?
There we go. Yeah.
She's a cool girl.
Yeah, I know. Brittany
was never a problem with
Brittany her. Was super sweet. She never caused us an issue ever. Was super kind and gracious and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I think just witnessing that type of level of fame, you know, she was pretty much in her prime when we went out on tour with her. She was with the song Toxic. If that rings a bell. This is when Toxic was booming on the radio.
Which was a great track.
She basically had every tabloid at every stop, paparazzi insane.
K-Fed was bumming smokes off me, which is ridiculous. Because the guy's dating Britney Spears and he's bumming smokes off me.
K-Fed was there. Yeah, it was like full-on drama situation. And There's one moment sometimes I say where Britney came out of her limo, and usually she would show up, you know, before her set, just enough time to get ready before she would hop on stage. And there was this moment where me and the bands and all the other bands, Khalees was on the tour as well. So her band was chilling out. My band was chilling out. The dancers, Britney's dancers were all chilling out. We're all laughing, having a good time outside. And I caught out of my side of my eye, oh, there's Britney's limo. She's pulling up for the show. And I could see in her eyes that she was making the decision whether or not to like come over and hang out with us, or she was going to go straight into her, like her, you know, VIP dressing room and get ready for the show and just kind of like be in her own world. And I could tell that she really wanted to come over and just like be one of the gang. But there's something that stopped her from doing that, and whether or not that was like what people expect of her because she was getting escorted by security, or whether, you know, she didn't have the, you know, guts to just like insert herself into the conversation or whatever. But it was just like this moment that I felt kind of sorry for her, for the fact that she couldn't just be like one of the gang. She had to be this kind of like put on a pedestal type of pop star that kind of had to almost live up to that celebrity thing where she had to have the escorts into her dressing room and couldn't just be, you know, just
I don't feel sorry for her. She's rich as shit. I don't feel sorry for her at all.
Well, I did, and I know that there's so many.
But she was totally cool with that.
Yeah,
she was totally fine. She played ping pong. She even rented. Check this out. She rented on a day off in Germany. She rented out like an equivalent to Wonderland, like Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
So in Germany, they have like some amusement park in whatever place we were, whether it was
I forgot what it was called.
But either way, it was equivalent to a Disneyland in Germany. And she rented the whole thing so that public couldn't use it. And the whole crew and all the show, all the people on the act could. So there's about 120 of us went to this amusement park that she rented for the whole day for everybody. So that, to me, is a pretty cool girl. So she was pretty down to earth.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't call that down to earth because she has a lot of money. But, you know, she was pretty cool.
Yeah, that type of stuff's always blown me away. I wonder how much it actually costs to rent out like Disney World or wherever you're at in Germany or something like that. That has to just be an insane amount of money.
I bet she spent $500,000. I bet she spent $500,000 without a joke. Like she was like, yeah, no problem. Like, you know, I know that she had 120 crew members on the tour with her. So, I mean, the math, when you do the math and how much the tickets were, there's $18,000, $20,000 a night. At $45 to $80 a pop,
Even more, I would say. I would say it would be like at least 100.
You do the math. I mean, she's bringing in cash. I can't diss a girl that brings in cash. Like
that. Well, I mean, if I'm doing the math correctly, you guys are roughly, what, 15, 16 at the time when you guys were doing this. And so, you know, what was it like for you guys to kind of be in front of those size crowds?
Come on, man. What do you think? It was awesome. Like, yeah. Like, as much as we're like a punk rock metal thing that we're doing now, I'm not going to lie, like playing in front of 20,000 screaming girls that are only 17 or 18 years old when you're in your early 20s at best, it works pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Well, the thing was is that Matt and the boys were a little older than me, so they got to go out to the club, splash their laminate, they'd get in VIP.
I started saying I was playing it because I had my laminate from the Britney Spears tour, and it said Onyx Hotel Tour. And then it said guitar player, and then it just had my name. So it didn't say that I was in a different band. So it looked like I was technically playing guitar for Britney Spears.
Yeah.
So I just started doing that. I was like, yeah. This is good.
That's dirty.
It's kind of lame because I was 16, so I couldn't get into like any of the clubs or whatever. I was underage, so everyone else had way more fun than me. But that's okay. I had to rest my voice to play the next day.
It was a great moment in time for us.
That's awesome. That's so great. And then singing voice of Barbie. That's an amazing title right there.
Yeah.
And the Barbie Diaries, you say, I guess you sang the songs in the Barbie Diaries. How does something like that come along?
Well, yeah, that was kind of a random, I think, MySpace at the time. MySpace was around. And I guess the daughter or somebody, acquaintance, to one of the execs at Mattel who was looking after the Barbie Diary soundtrack and the music for it, had heard my album and heard this song called Charada in particular that really spoke to them. And they tried to get a hold of my management and found me through MySpace. And I remember getting a random email or message on MySpace. And I was like, is this for real? Is this really like Barbie, like Mattel trying to contact me? So on a whim, I was actually in California, which where their headquarters was, and I just made the phone call and I said, hey, I don't know if this is the right place or the right guy or the right number, but I heard that you guys were interested in doing something together and let's just set up a meeting. So I ended up meeting with the exec like 2 days later for dinner, and things just kind of snowballed from there, and I just kind of got the opportunity to basically be the kind of the most rock star Barbie's ever been was in this video, in this movie called The Barbie Diaries, where Barbie started a rock band.
Oh, nice.
And so so basically she was the singer of the rock band, and they were looking for someone that could sing, that could pull off all the parts. And so I was the lucky one selected, I guess. And yeah. It's one thing for the resume, that's for sure. And what was cool is they had a little featurette on myself and like put photos of me inside of the DVD jacket. So to this day, I will get people at Sumo Psycho shows that'll show up, young girls that'll be like, I first saw you at the Barbie Diaries and I watched that video. And
that's,
you know,
awesome.
So what you realize is everybody who was young once and like listened to that kind of stuff and pop music, they all grow up and they all have music tastes that evolve and change. And luckily I've been kind of part of that evolution, and they've looked up my name and saw what I've been doing now. And a lot of them are still fans, which is pretty cool.
Well, that's what's funny you said that, because the reason I even thought to look back and like really go into your past was someone said something about you on Facebook about you being in Sumo Psycho. And then one of the commenters goes, oh, she's doing metal now. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Why would someone say that? So I had to go back and look. And I was like, wow, this, honestly, every click was like even more fascinating than the last. And obviously,
yeah,
and,
you know, sure.
You know, it's obviously your past is who you are. And it's not something I'm like, oh my God, this is funny. I'm like fascinated by it because, you know, 99% of the people on this podcast come in and like, all right, well, I bought a guitar at 15. I started learning, you know, Master of Puppets, and then I got in a band. You know, not many people have your career path, and I think that's amazing.
Yeah, well, I think the other thing of...
I keep telling her to write a book. We've got to write a book about this shit, man.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing, too, is with the new generations these days, this day and age, everyone's lives are so documented now, whereas, like, you know, it just started because when I was, I was at the beginning of YouTube when I first, when I was, like, 16 or 14 years old. That's when, like, YouTube just started. But, I mean, I can imagine, you know, for future generations, people that are talented in music or want to, you know, eventually start a career in acting or some type of public kind of career, there's going to be some documentation of their early, you know, life as a child and, you know, making geeky videos on YouTube or whatever social media of the future there's going to be. There's going to be a record that people are going to be able to find of everyone's history.
Yeah,
and you're going to realize, you're going to realize that it's not just, you know, like, you know, there's going to be people with some pretty freaky, weird stuff that they, you know, started out in before they got to where they got, you know,
it's all there.
So, yeah, it's just like, you know, a lot of the pop stars these days that I'll come across, there's such a diary of their previous lives on YouTube and MySpace and social media that it's like so well documented that people will, you know, search to the ends of the earth to find, like, you know, photos of them doing this stuff. So yeah, it's kind of interesting that, you know, I had a lot of my life, my parents say I'm the most well documented child they have because of how many just videos and photos were taken throughout my life. It's crazy.
It's funny you even said that because I actually, my 12-year-old, who's obsessed with YouTube and Instagram and all that stuff, he posted his first Instagram video today, and it's kind of, it's a little cheesy, and I was like, I called him because he posted it, and like I saw it, and I called him, and I'm like, had to have that, listen, I'm like, everything that you put out there, even how trivial it is, is going to come back and haunt you later in life, so make sure you're not putting stupid stuff on there.
He's like, what do you mean, Dad? That was so cool. Didn't you like it? It's so awesome.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, you know, what might be cool today may not be cool tomorrow. So
look at Dad's photos of his JNCOs and we'll talk, you know.
Yeah.
It does kind of look like a turning point might have been. Go ahead.
What's your son's name?
Blake.
Blake.
Yeah. I like
that. Yeah, that's a good name. You don't have to tell Blake to watch himself.
Well, the video was about, like, it was very, like, you know, it was a very deep video, but for a 12-year-old, it's like nobody cares about what a 12-year-old thinks about. Like, he's like, he was going on about heaven and hell and what happens at in the afterlife, and I'm like, oh my god, like, you know, it wasn't just a, you know, like, you know, making fart noises with his armpits or something, which would have been funny. Like, it was very deep.
He's like a serious, Blake's a serious deep 12-year-old.
Right.
I'm like, I told him, I was like, if you ever want to run for office or anything, this video is going to be shown. So just remember that.
You need to talk to Blake and go like, okay, this is how you're going to get big. Is you need to run with the theme of the deep 12-year-old. And it's like you create this Instagram channel that's called the deep 12-year-old. Next year it'll be the deep 13-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's deep 12-year-old. All the deep 12-year-old thoughts, you know, and all the 12-year-olds are following on and so on and so on. That's how it goes. You got to build a show, man. Deep 12-year-old. There you go.
The deep 12. I'm going to write that down.
Blake, the deep 12-year-old.
Blake, he's a very deep 12-year-old.
That's the kind of shit, just so you know, if we were in the studio, Sky would come in and be like, guys, I found this 12-year-old online. You got to watch this shit. And he would, like, take a towel. He'd be showing me, like, each fucking video of Blake fucking tripping about something deep. And this is the kind of stuff Sky falls for big time. I'm telling you right now.
I love it. I love it when kids are so, like, into what they do. You know what I mean? And so passionate, even if they don't know what they're talking about. I like it.
Well, Sky, after this conversation, I will tag you in the deep Blake 12-year-old video so you can watch it and show everybody.
There you go.
So... back to Sky and Sumo Psycho. Looks like kind of one of the turning points, you know, and, you know, you talk about liking Skindred a lot and stuff and kind of making the band that way. But listening to Tim Armstrong's Into Action, I kind of felt a Sumo Psycho vibe there, too.
There you go.
How did you meet Tim and how did that that collaboration come along?
Yeah, so I was working on my second album, my second solo album in L.A., and I was pretty much you know, just bouncing around from songwriter to songwriter, basically trying a ton of stuff. And one of the names that came up was Tim Armstrong, who, my A&R guy, who is really cool dude, who was actually, in the metal and rock scene, who happened to take me on, even though I was a pop artist on his roster, just because we got along so well. He hooked us up with having a meeting with Tim. And I mean, Tim and I just kind of, it was like one of those awkward first meetings that ended up really, you know, because it was so awkward at the beginning, we all had to kind of let our defenses down and just be like totally open. And I tell the story a few times about me putting my foot in my mouth because I was working with so many other writers that I kind of was rolling my eyes at how, you know, I just felt a little bit like one of those processed kind of pop chicks who was just put, you know, oh, hey, you know, I'm meeting another person for the first time and they're going to obviously assume like A, B, and C about me. And we're just going to write a song that sounds like everything they've written for every other girl that came through for the past 6 months. And I was having so much of that that I felt so excited to work with Tim because I thought it was going to be something a bit outside of the box. So I told him, I was like, oh man, I've been writing with all these like hit writers. And I'm so excited to finally work with you. Like, it's going to be something real and authentic. He's like, girl, you don't think I can write a hit? And I was like, I'm like, you totally can. I just mean like, you don't really get what I mean. I mean, like, in the sense of like, you know, they're just like kind of manufactured hit writer. And I don't know. I just kept digging myself like kind of a hole. And, but after we got over that initial like weirdness, it was like super cool. He invited me to tons of Rancid shows, like Rancid rehearsals. I got to perform with Into Action at the Weenie Roast in LA. I got to be in like a couple of his music videos for a solo record, and I got to perform with Rancid a bunch of times in Toronto and New York. And so he really kind of took me under his wing and kind of into his family. And I got to work with his in-house video producer, Rachel, who was really, really awesome. And anyway, a great portion of my time in LA was spent with him and their crew. And so we started off actually writing Into Action was a song for my record. I have two other songs I wrote with him on my second album. But he ended up loving Into Action so much, he asked if he could do a version of it for his solo record, Poet's Life. Mm-hmm. And that song ended up kind of blowing up for him, especially out in LA. And so a lot of people actually thought, because I have my own version of that song, that I covered his version. I'm like, wait a minute, this is the original. So yeah, it's cool. There's still a few people that will recognize me from that song, and they'll be like, dude, you were the chick on Into Action. And, you know, it was such a fun time in my life. And it was kind of a segue into, like you said, like the rock kind of metal world, is working with people like Tim.
And then what was the turning point in your life that made you just truly want to go in the sumo psycho direction?
Well, I had a super like life complex with being like a teenager and then going into my 20s being so associated with being like this teen pop singer. And as soon as I was in my 20s, I'm like, whoa, I'm like an adult now. Like, I can no longer like, you know, use my age as kind of like a reason to, you know, people would say, you're so great for your age, or you're so young. And I'm like, I can't use that anymore. Like, I'm 20 years old. And I had written a record that was set to be released through Capitol, that there's like a ton of drama with the record label at that time. And I had gone to Canada to try to release it, and I had released it in Canada. And it was just like a lot of kind of the industry political side of things, B, my personal life. And I just felt like I needed something fresh and new to kind of get me jazzed about music again. And B, I kind of had reunited with Matt and with him showing me all this kind of cool music, including Skindred, that I hadn't heard before. And between all of it just happening at once, I was like, you know what? I just want to start fresh and do something new. And I want to just completely forget all rules about what, you know, is going to sell or what's going to be popular. And I just want to express, I just want to write and just see what comes out. And so we worked on some music for a couple of years and then decided we just wanted to throw out some music videos online and build it kind of almost as an exclusively online project with music videos and music. And then as it started to kind of take a hold and fans actually started really enjoying it, we just got more and more of a pressure to, you know, tour it, and more of a pressure to actually make an album instead of just a bunch of singles. And eventually it's kind of turned into, you know, its own beast, where now, you know, we're on the road a ton of the year and, you know, trying to fit in our music videos as much as we can in between. But it's definitely become like a full like album cycle, tour, whole thing. So it's exciting. It's good. It means the fans are wanting more, and they're constantly hungry for new stuff, which, as you know, in this industry these days is like hard to keep up with all the time. So, you know, we're definitely keeping busy and
You know, the music that I've heard is amazing. You know, your story's amazing. Obviously, you're getting to do a lot of great tours and stuff. So I it all seems like it's looking up, and, you know, congratulations to you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, brother. We appreciate it. Thanks for having us on your podcast, bro.
Yeah.
I do have one question about the guys in Fozzy. I did play in a band once with Frank Fonseray and Billy Gray. So how great are those two guys?
I like Billy showed me when we went out on the road with Billy.
Yeah.
I'm into punk rock and metal, but I'm not like a lead guitar player guy, but I write a lot of stuff. But like Billy's a thrasher, like he can shred, and when he really gets going. So just going over when we went on tour with him, I was like, hey, just show me some pentatonic scales. And, you know, he just went over some scales with me that it like helped me increase my playing in the past 2 years, ever since I met Billy Gray.
Yeah, Billy is like the most animated dude I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, very good human being. Same with fucking Rich Ward is awesome. Like that guy from that band, I mean, he couldn't be more complimentary for us. Even when we release new singles, he still like tweets them out and promotes them for us. And I mean, those guys, Fozzy was like pretty much our very first big tour ever, wasn't it?
Yeah.
As Sumo?
Yeah.
And so those guys get major props. And Chris Jericho can party like an animal.
Yeah, he's like one of the funniest humans ever. And we bonded over the fact of both being from Canada. And, yeah, Chris and I had some good times over some vodka sodas.
Yeah, he's a good human being.
Yeah.
Love that whole band.
I've told this story on the podcast before, but my only interaction with Chris Jericho was one of the first times they came through. I do the podcast out of Louisville, Kentucky. One of the first times they came through town, obviously I had played in a band with Billy and Frank. So I go as kind of a guest of those two. And I'm in, you know, after the show, we're all backstage, and a band meeting kind of breaks out. I guess the show wasn't 100% great. So they were kind of having a talk of like, why, you know, like, what do we need to do better? And I'm just standing there because I've been in those meetings 1,000 times. And so I'm trying to, you know, just, I'm just hanging out. Like, I didn't even think anything about it. And all of a sudden Chris looks over at me and he's like, hey man, can you give us a minute? And I look around and I'm the only non-Fozzy member in the room. And I'm like, oh, I guess I should go. And like, he was wearing like a, you know, cut off shirt. So it was like a huge giant muscle, you know, just like, hey man, give us a minute. And I'm like, oh, my bad.
Yeah. That's good. Chris Jericho, we kind of played a prank on our drummer, who is a huge Chris Jericho fan, like followed him in wrestling ever since he was a little kid. And we knew that out of all the band members, he was going to geek out the most over Chris. And so we told him, like, dude, you got to play it cool. Like, we're supposed to be a band on this tour. I don't want you fangirling in front of Chris. Like, you need to play it cool. Like, we're supposed to be a cool rock band here. And so between Chris and all of the rest of the members of our band, we decided we were going to take selfies with Chris before our drummer Andy got to. And so
we told Chris,
like, don't take a selfie with our drummer. Like, avoid it, because it'll be so funny. And so, like, for instance, I would take a photo with Chris, and then I'd be like, oh, hey Andy, do you want to check something on my computer? And it'd be, like, my screensaver. I'd just, like, pop it up with, like, me and Chris, like, hanging out. And he'd be like, oh, man, where'd you get that photo of you and Chris? I was like, sorry, man. Like, you know, we're just hanging out the other night. He's like, oh, man, I really want to hang out with Chris. So, like, finally it got to the end of the tour, and we were at a party with Chris, and, like, Chris was like, oh, yeah, man, like, I'll take a selfie with you. And he holds up his phone and takes a picture of just his face. So Andy's completely cut out of it and hands the phone back to Andy, and he flips the photo, and his, like, face is cut out.
And just Jericho smiling like an idiot.
Yeah. And it just kept going on like this for a while until finally Andy caught on that we were all, like, conspiring against him so that he couldn't get a good photo with them. Wow. It's pretty good. And, yeah, and Jericho was a good sport and was hilarious the whole time.
They've got a good single out right now. Judas is doing well.
Well, the whole record is doing really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so I didn't realize you were from Louisville, Kentucky, and that's funny because I got a good story about Louisville.
All right, bring it.
When I was 14, I went on a show called Switch, which is basically where you switch lives with somebody random and they don't tell you who you're going to switch lives with.
Okay.
So I met a girl from nearby Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah.
And so she ended up coming to Toronto and having to learn how to sing and perform with my band and all this stuff. Meanwhile, I was in Lexington learning how to high jump and country line dance and all these like cliches of what people get to do in Kentucky. And I was, one of her jobs is she was a morning news anchor at her school.
What?
Yeah. So she
would,
at her school. So they would have like a morning news anchor that would go on and tell the news. And so I had to fill her shoes because I had to do everything she did. And so I get on the teleprompter or whatever comes up and it says Louisville. And I say Louisville because never been to Kentucky or didn't know. And as soon as I said in blah, 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 Louisville, like the entire production shut down and the entire school knew, oh my God, she's not one of us. She's not from here. So it's like I was completely outed because of my pronunciation of Louisville. And so, yeah, thanks to your town, everybody in that school then knew that I was, you know, not one of the school. I was a stranger. So, yeah, that outed me.
It looks like Louisville, though.
Yeah, it does, but I was wrong.
That's good stuff. Well, all right, so the latest single is Undefeated. Great video. I watched it today. Fantastic song. And what's the future of Sumo Psycho at this point?
Yeah, well, we're you know, hot off the heels of our Kings and Queens tour, so we've just come home to kind of...
We had a new manager.
Yeah,
we've changed management for the first time, which is kind of neat.
We're working with Desafara, known for the vocals of Coal Chamber and Devil Driver.
Cool.
He's been really cool to get to know. We met him for the first time when we were in L.A. on this tour, so... We're kind of regrouping and starting to write.
What about that for a story, right? So the guy from Coal Chamber just calls me randomly. I'm sitting at home. I'm working in my studio. I get a phone call, ring, ring. I pick it up. And this guy's like, hey, my name is Dez. I want to manage your band. And I'm like, who the hell are you? And he's just talking away. And I get off the phone and I'm like, hey, Sky, this guy wants to manage us. I don't know who this guy is. And she's like, well, let's look him up, Dez Ferrara. And it's the singer from Coal Chamber and Devil Driver. I was like, the guy didn't fucking say anything to me. He didn't say to me, hey, I do this or this. He just tells me, hey, I'm this guy named Dez. I got this band. So now we're in bed with this guy and we're interested because, you know, he can bring us to America more. So we're hoping we're going to come to America more thanks to Dez.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's, you know, it's all about, like I said, finding people that are just as passionate and get our vision. And so I think the plan is to write some more. Matt and I are lucky enough that we have a home studio here. We have a converted church out in the countryside and our little town outside of Hamilton, Ontario.
It's not really a town. It's like a street.
Yeah, it's a very small community here. It's kind of a cool place after we're done tour to kind of get away and get inspired to write some new songs. And always after tour, there's like ideas brimming out of us.
So we're going to write some new stuff for the next couple months, I think. We're going to try and knock out a whole other record in the next 3 months.
New record.
We got something interesting.
Yeah.
And we're going to go back to, we start in Europe or England. I'm not sure which one. I think we have a tour with CKY, if you remember CKY. Can't Kill Yourself. We're going to go out with them in November. Sky, you're killing me right now. In November, we're going out with them?
Yeah, we start in November, and we're doing a run with them, and we'll probably, hasn't been announced yet, but fingers crossed, we might have a few other dates added to that tour that we'll be on.
But it'll be a good way to finish the year off. I mean, we've been pretty busy. We've been to New Zealand, England, Europe, and this in America in the past 6 months.
But yeah.
We've been pretty busy, so taking a couple months to write some material might be fun for us, actually.
Yeah. And it's always nice to be home in Canada during these months, the summer months, because it's beautiful here. And yeah, so I'm excited to write some more. I want to do some more videos. I'm dying to get some more videos under our belts. And
are you?
Yeah, and put some put some new stuff out and get creative.
She's on her deathbed. Make a video.
We always laugh about how like we love making videos because it is quite an interesting concept. Having to get the right shot, because Sky and I shoot everything ourselves, whoever's in front of the camera, the other person's holding the camera. But we always make jokes like, oh, it can't wait to make the next video. But whenever we're like the day before, we fucking hate it. We hate ourselves. We hate our lives. We hate everything.
It's just stressful. We're trying to make it awesome.
The day before the video, we want to kill ourselves and just get a day job and work as like a plumber or something. Just the day before. But after the video is shot, we're usually pretty happy.
Yeah.
Totally understandable. An hour into the interview, and I never once asked you, what's it like to be a female singer in front in a rock band? So congratulations.
It's like, you know. It's like,
you have an answer for that?
Yeah, I do. I think it's, besides from the fact that once in a while you get that question of what it's like to be it, I think it's just like being a guy in a rock band. You still get the fucking dirty green room, the shitty bathrooms, the sweaty, you know, no air conditioning, you know, back rooms, the no air conditioning tour bus.
Honestly, the only real main difference between being a female and a male in this industry is the peeing situation, because you can't just pull over anywhere. And I had a situation in Europe where I actually tried to pee on the side of the road and ended up getting stung by a stinging nettle, which is a plant that I didn't know existed until that moment.
Gave her like an allergic reaction.
That gave me an
biblical allergic reaction. Her ass was like leprosy. Like, there was things coming off her ass that
man. You don't need to tell everybody.
Biblical.
Basically, it was a terrifying experience.
Like, God was smiting you, kind of thing.
It was a terrifying experience and made me, you know, wish that I had a penis for a moment. just so I could pee standing up. But other than that, it's basically just finding a good place to plug in my curling iron and have some lighting for some makeup somewhere.
You just went all pop on me.
No, honestly, those are peeing and being able to like self-groom properly are the only two.
Peeing and being.
The only two real different concerns I feel that are different for being a female. And I mean, you know, I get a lot of the, you know, there are some dudes out there in the audience who, you know, they think that because you're dancing around on stage or whatever, that they have some kind of, you know, ownership over your body, that they can take photos under your skirt or grab you at the merch stand afterwards or whatever. But I like to think that those guys are few and far between, and the ones that do exist, you know, they're definitely in the wrong, and that's not how, you know, people going to concerts and attending these things should act. And, you know, hopefully that, you know, if that does happen, I usually call them out and usually tell them that
they're... Tell them to buy a CD. Yeah. If you're going to grab at, better buy a fucking CD, man.
I usually say, you know, there's a line that can be crossed. I want everybody to have fun, and I'll tell everybody, you know, I like having fun with everyone. I like being lighthearted and having a good time, but there's definitely lines that can be crossed and are crossed. And, you know, but I think I can handle that pretty well. Just like anyone else who has, you know, somebody who's making them feel uncomfortable, that's, you know, I'm powerful enough and I got the microphone to make sure that that's not going to affect me in the long term. So, yeah. Anyway, other than that, it's pretty much the same as being a dude.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks so much, guys. This has been a blast. I was, you know, not knowing what to expect going into it, and coming out on the other end, even a bigger fan of the band now. So let's go ahead and get all the socials out of the way, and then what song would you like me to play out the episode with?
Yeah, so social media, you can catch us at Sumo Psycho, which is Facebook or Twitter or Instagram / Sumo Psycho, SUMOCYCO, or sumopsycho.com, as well as our YouTube channel, which is where I highly suggest those of you that are first listening to our band, check us out. It's youtube.com/sumopsycho. And if you want to play a track, you could play a song, Sleep Tight. Matt was playing it on guitar today. It's from our album, Opus Mar, and it's pretty rocking. It's usually our lead track on our set when we play live. there you go.
Very cool. Well, Matt, Sky, thanks so much for taking the time tonight, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Give us a call anytime, brother.
Yeah. Have a good one. Enjoy your night.
You call me trouble, cause I'm a rebel. You call me fragile, cause I'm hard to handle. You call me tyrant, cause I'm defiant. You call me lawless, to me that's just progress. You call me junior, I'm the future. You seem damaged, I'm the suture. You call me wicked, cause I'm persistent. You say goodbye, I say hello. I'm gonna bet that you say slow when I say go. Go.
What's up, everybody? This is Rob Rivera from the band Nonpoint, and this is my weekly Rob's Pick from the Kit. This week, I'm picking the band Slayer. I may have picked them before, but doesn't matter. I'm going to pick them again. The song is called Epidemic. What can you say about Slayer? I mean, just amazing band. incredibly influential to many bands out there, many musicians. To me, still, they possess the most brutal 28 minutes of music in Rain and Blood. There's not been one album more brutal than that one. There's just like a punk rock, death metal, thrash fusion on that record that's just incredible. Dave Lombardo's like one of my favorite drummers of all time, and he just absolutely kills on that record. And still to this day, dude kills. He just amazing drummer. I got to meet him for a little bit there in Australia. We did first Soundwave, and Slayer was on it. Really nice guy, and super cool Latino. Love the guy from Cuba, and I just amazing. And for those who don't know, he plays in Suicidal Tendencies now. But anyway, here is Slayer with Epidemic.
Thank you to Sky Sweetnam and Matt Drake of Sumo Psycho. Make sure you're checking them out. Make sure you're checking out the YouTube channel. A lot of fun videos, and they're doing a lot of great stuff over there. Support the independent artists out there. Once again, thank you to Rob Rivera from Nonpoint for hooking that one up, and also for his weekly pick from the kit. Make sure you're supporting Talk To Me on Patreon at patreon.com/talktome. And also, our sponsor, Good Company with Bowling. Make sure you're checking out our good friend down there in Atlanta, Scott Bowling and Good Company. And that's it. If you can hear in the background, you might be hearing fireworks because I'm recording this intro on the 4th of July. Hopefully you guys had a safe 4th of July. We had a great time in the pool, hanging out, and good times. So for the Talk To Me podcast, I am Joshua Toomey, and I will talk to you next Thursday.